degrees or so. And then Ramanuja began to feel very weak, in the sense that symptoms were manifesting in his body that were not seen earlier. And all the devotees were getting increasingly worried. They were waiting for the last, for the final passing away pastime of Ramanujacharya. And then he organized a very big feast. And he told, he had all the devotees invited there. And in the feast, after that was over, then he went into the temple. It was the custom that whenever the Charanamrita of the Lord was being distributed for the first time, it was Ramanujacharya who would be the first person to receive the Charanamrita. He would take it, and then the others would also take. This time, however, he called his appointed successor, Parashar Bhatta. And he said, "Parashar, now you go ahead of me, and you will be the first one to receive it." Because Ramanujacharya wanted to ensure that after his departure, there would be no issues with succession. He had already announced it, so all the devotees knew that Parashar Bhatta would be the successor Acharya to Ramanujacharya. Nevertheless, he also wanted to ensure that Parashar Bhatta would be given the same respect that he had been accorded as the Acharya, so that there would be no problems later. So instead of him taking the Charanamrita first, he put Parashar Bhatta in front of him, so that everyone could see that he had now instituted this practice himself of Parashar Bhatta taking the Charanamrita first. So then after Parashar Bhatta had taken it, then Ramanuja went and then he took the Charanamrita. So he set the practice, the standard, for many, many years to come. And then he informed his brother Govinda. He said, "Please teach him well. He is very young, but he will be the next great Acharya to follow." So because Parashar was young, Ramanuja was old, his disciples, most of them were very, very old. So he wanted somebody young who would continue the lineage, spiritual lineage of the Sri Sampradaya. Therefore he had chosen Parashar Bhatta. And then he called them together again to give them instructions, all the disciples. And he said, "None of you should be worried overly about your maintenance in this world. As far as your deha yatra is concerned," deha means the body, yatra means the journey, "your condition of body in this world, your monetary situation, your body and so on, your family situation, don't be overly anxious about it. Because if you are, it indicates that you don't have faith in the scripture. Because the scripture explains the law of karma, which says that according to destiny, you will receive whatever happiness and distress is due to you. So accept that and don't worry overly about it. Because your deha yatra, or the destination of your body, is karma adhina. Karma adhina. Adhina means it is subservient to or under the control of your karma. So according to the karma you have performed in the past, you will get wealth or you will not get wealth. You'll have good health or bad health. So don't overly worry about these things. And you should not even overly worry about attaining spiritual perfection." Then they were puzzled. He said, "How is that? We can understand when you say that we shouldn't worry overly about one's material situation, but you are saying we shouldn't even worry overly about our spiritual perfection, going back to Godhead?" He said, "Yes." He says, "As far as the Atma Yatra is concerned, the destination or the journey of the soul is concerned, that is Ishwaradhin. It is under the control of the Supreme Lord. So why should you worry about it? If you overly start worrying that, will I reach the Vaikuntha climax or not? Will I reach Goloka or not? Then you compromise a couple of things. First and foremost, you compromise the spirit of total surrender. Ananya Sharana Pam. Sharana means surrender. Ananya means one-pointed. So when you surrender to Krishna, you want to do whatever he says. It's not that you can demand, I want to do this, I want to do that. Whatever the Lord wants, you do. The second thing is Ananya Bhogyatvam. That spirit that I am only meant for Krishna's pleasure. I only want to serve Krishna for his pleasure, not for my pleasure. That point will also be compromised. And the third point is Ananya Gatitvam. That Krishna's lotus feet are your only destination. You're not independent in any way. And whatever Krishna wishes will happen. So these three things will be compromised if you overly desire that you want to go to Vaikuntha. Then Guru Maharaj, what should we be concerned with? What should we be worried about? Just worry about whether you're able to serve Krishna nicely. Worry about how well you are able to please the Supreme Lord. And that's really the Krishna conscious philosophy. We're not concerned about this destination or that destination. Although the pure devotees of the Lord will automatically go to Vaikuntha, to the spiritual world, they will be taken by the Lord, even if they don't ask for it. But nevertheless, the devotees only want unconditional service to the Lord. They don't demand anything in return, even entrance into Vaikuntha. Sometimes because of the intimate dealings, the devotees may speak to the Lord and ask for things just as Quraysh and Ramanuja asked for the Lord. But that level of devotion was extraordinary. So then he said, just be concerned that you can please the Lord by your service. So be worried whether you are pleasing the Lord through your service or not. That should be your worry. And then he spoke many things actually. We don't have time today to speak about those instructions. But he also instructed them to not commit any Vaishnava aparad. Always serve the devotees. Never offend them. And then he made a surprising statement. He said, even if it is the goddess of fortune, Sita, if Sita Devi also offends a devotee, then she also is in trouble. Just see what happened when Sita offended Lakshman. When she sent Lord Ram to find the golden deer, the Asura Maricha, at behest of Ravana, had taken the form of a golden deer to entice Sita. And that was Ravana's devious plan. So when Ram went out in search of this golden deer, who was Maricha in disguise, Maricha very cunningly cried out, Lakshman, Lakshman, save me! He cried out in Ram's voice, although it wasn't Ram calling at all. So when he called out like that, Sita was alarmed. Lakshman was confident. Lakshman understood that Ram was perfectly capable of defending himself. But Sita became very worried. She said, Lakshman, that's Ram's voice. So go immediately and help him. He's in need now. Lakshman said, no, there's no need. Ram is perfectly capable of defending himself. There's nothing to worry at all. And in any case, my elder brother gave me strict instructions to not leave you and go away. And then Sita, in her anxiety, she lost control of herself and she said, I know why you want to be here. Because you have bad intentions. So you don't want to go and save your brother. Lakshman couldn't bear that. He couldn't tolerate that. So he said, all right, I'll go. So he left. Of course, there is this pastime about him drawing a line, which later became known as the famous Lakshman Rekha. But don't cross this line and go. That isn't there in the Valmiki Ramayana, but it's there in the other I suppose, in the other itihasa somewhere. So because she offended Lakshman like that, Ramanujacharya said, see what happened to her afterwards. She was kidnapped by Ravana. And then see the destination, how much she had to suffer in Lanka. And even thereafter. Of course, Sita, Lakshman, Ram, these are not ordinary jivas. And certainly, these are all pastimes that take place to instruct us in the material world. Srimad Bhagavatam says that the purpose of the advent of Lord Ram in this world, Marty Avatara, Marty Loka, in this planet where everybody dies, the Supreme Lord appeared in this world as Ram, not simply to kill the demon Ravana, but to give instructions to the people of this world through his actions. So through his life story, we learn many lessons. So here is an important lesson, and Ramanuja was alluding to that when he said that even Sita Devi is not spared the consequences of it. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, he also mentioned, because Sachi Mata, his mother, once offended Advaita Acharya by holding him responsible for his older brother taking sannyas. She is responsible, he is responsible for taking my son away from me. Advaita Acharya was just preaching Krishna consciousness. So eventually Mahaprabhu arranged for Sachi Mata to take the dust from the lotus feet of Advaita Acharya. When Advaita Acharya was not in a position to know, he was in an ecstatic trance at that time. So in any case, Ramanuja gave a lot of emphasis to the service of the Vaishnavas. In the Sri Sampradaya in particular, this is very strongly emphasized. The service to devotees, Vaishnava Seva. And then, as time passed, the time arrived, the appointed time came, and Ramanuja lay down with his brother Govinda, who is also a sannyasi, and his disciple, with his head on Ramanuja's thighs, and his feet on another devotee, Andhrapurna's thighs. And as he lay there with all the devotees surrounding him, he left this world and returned to Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. Different devotees, different disciples of his were chanting. Some were chanting the holy names, some were reciting the various scriptures. And they all had tears in their eyes, but they were consistently reciting and going on and on chanting. And in that situation, Ramanujacharya departed from this world and entered into the kingdom of the Supreme Lord, the Vaikuntha world. There are many parallels like this in the passing away of different acharyas. Madhvacharya also, and I'll be very brief here. When he passed away, he's the great Acharya of the Madhva Sampradaya. In Udupi, there is a famous Krishna temple where there is a deity of Balakrishna that was personally installed by Madhvacharya himself. And that was a deity that had been worshipped by Rukmini Devi herself in Dwarka. It was Krishna who had manifested himself as in the child form in order to fulfill the request of his principal queen, Rukmini Devi. And somehow, it's a long story, but somehow the deity came here, Madhvacharya installed the deity there. Next to the temple of Krishna is the ancient temple of Ananteshwar. It was there even before the deity of Krishna came to Udupi. So that was where Madhvacharya would often give lectures. And he would teach many things to his disciples. So when the time came for Madhvacharya to depart, he had already prepared his disciples and other devotees. And he sat there on the place where he usually sat, next to the main sanctum sanctorum, the altar in the temple. His seat was reserved. he sat there. And his authentic biography, Madhva Vijay, explains that the demigods started showering flowers because they knew that the time had come for Madhvacharya to depart from this world. So as he was sitting there, speaking on his favorite scripture, the Aitareya Upanishad, he was reciting that, and the flowers were falling on him to such a degree that his body was entirely covered with flowers and his body couldn't be seen. Then some of his leading disciples rushed forward to push off the flowers so that his body could be seen again. And as they started pushing away the flowers, the body was nowhere to be seen. Madhvacharya had disappeared. He had gone to another realm of existence. He had gone to join his spiritual master Vyasadeva in Badrikashram. That is what the Madhvas believe. So he departed there, speaking on the scriptures. So glory is passing away. To pass away when you're hearing the holy name, when you're hearing the devotees reciting the scriptures like the Bhagavatam, or when you're speaking the Bhagavatam or some other Vedic scripture like that. Even amongst the devotee community in ISKCON now, there are, and the devotees always make sure that when there is a devotee who's about to leave, the other devotees gather together and they simply do kirtan there. There's no crying, no emotion, but everybody focuses all their mental energy on chanting the holy names to facilitate the departure of that soul further on to the spiritual world. They don't waste their time crying. They don't waste their time talking other things. They just chant. And then the devotee is listening to the chanting, or the devotee is in a position to chant along with them physically, they chant verbally, otherwise in the mind. Even if the devotee is not in a state of consciousness or an external consciousness, the devotee still chant till this particular devotee leaves. Many, many instances like this. In Vrindavan, in fact, there is a hospice that is especially meant for those who are about to leave. Because many devotees from the Krishna conscious movement are getting old. Or even if they're not that old, some of them have terminal illnesses where they're given only a short time to live. So those who have been given by their doctors only a limited time to live, only these devotees can actually be admitted to this hospice. And then they get not just the medical treatment, which is palliative care to reduce the pain and so on, but more importantly, they get spiritual care. They have devotees who come and read to them. They have devotees who will chant for them, especially as they approach their last few moments or their hours. I have done that on a few occasions, and especially when some of our sannyasis were leaving from this world. I remember the one sannyasi who used to manage the BBT for many years, His Holiness Narmada Swami. So I used to be based in Vrindavan in those days, and then I was suddenly told, I used to visit him every now and then, because he had taken a vow that he wanted to live in Vrindavan, and he didn't want to eat or drink. He was just focusing his energies on living in a proper frame of consciousness. So then I got a message that he's about to leave any moment. So then I rushed, I left all my other work and I rushed, and we all sat there. I was sitting right next to him and we were chanting and we were all doing kirtan together. And as I was looking at his face right then and there, he departed from this world. And there were several devotees sitting around. And we were all chanting. You could see his last breath. And especially Vrindavan is the place where people would like to leave their bodies. But even if somebody doesn't leave their body in Vrindavan for practical reasons, they're not able to reach there or whatever, still there is no loss, because ultimately Vrindavan is where Krishna is. And if our thoughts are with Krishna, then we are in Vrindavan. That is our philosophy. Mora mana Vrindavan, Mahaprabhu has said. My mind is Vrindavan. So even though Vrindavan is also a physical destination, it's a place, but also it's a state of consciousness. So when we are always thinking of Krishna, then we are with Krishna, we are in Vrindavan. So as far as a devotee is concerned, even if he or she dies anywhere in Sydney or New York or China or anywhere, the devotee is assured of being taken back to Godhead. But nevertheless, for people who know that they have a certain amount of time left, they like to go to Vrindavan to leave. And Srila Prabhupada, our Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, did that. He was already 81 years old. He had begun this movement at the age of 69 when he incorporated ISKCON in New York. He was about 70 years old. He had only 12 years in which he established his worldwide movement with over 100 centers and temples, with thousands of disciples made, with books, many, many titles of books, including the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, many other books, published in many languages, in huge quantities, unprecedented. He achieved remarkable things in a very short span of time. And if one were to analyze it from a material point of view, one could say the most extraordinary rags-to-riches story you can ever find. Because when he went to America, he had only $7 in his pocket. And even in those days, $7 didn't get you very far for too long. And by the time he was ready to depart from this world, 12 years later, he was presiding over practically what could be called in material terms a spiritual empire. Thousands of devotees, hundreds of centers. Some of them were castles that were purchased. Some of them old churches that were purchased. Some of them grand new temples that were built, like in Vrindavan, Hyderabad, Vrindavan, Mumbai also. And then it was now time for him to go. But even though he had control, so to speak, from an ordinary point of view, of so much of opulence, but he was not at all attached to it. Because he understood this is only for Krishna's service. So he would simply ensure that everything, every penny that was received, was used for Krishna's service. That no money was wasted. He was very particular. He was old school. So he would maintain his little notes about how much money he spent every day. And his old diaries from the time he was in Delhi, distributing back to Godheads, he would mention the paisa spent for the rickshaw, how much he spent for this, how much he spent for buying the toothpaste, and how much he spent for this. He would make meticulous notes to see that everything was kept carefully and no unnecessary expense was incurred. So in any case, as time passed now, he came to Vrindavan. He was in frail health and devotees were really worried. And in 1976, he came for his last visit to the Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, just outside of London. And then he moved, he expressed his desire to go back to Vrindavan. Of course, every now and then when he got some strength back, he would want to go out again to preach. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to say, prana ache jar, she hetu prachar. Whoever has life, he preaches Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada was like that. Whenever he got even an ounce of energy, he would want to go out and preach again to some part of the world. So anyway, this time he realized that he had little time left. He had only a few months left. So he went to India. And then he wanted to go to Vrindavan. He went to some other places first. Then eventually he reached Vrindavan. In Vrindavan he was extremely feeble. Practically there was no flesh on his body. He was all bones, skin and bone. And then he started preaching to his disciples. And he said, this is what this material body, this material world is. This material world means only skin and bones. And then he started mentioning how, in the olden days, people could control their life airs by keeping them within the bones. In Satya Yuga that used to happen. Like Hiranyakashipu's body was practically eaten away when he was performing austerities, but he managed to hold the life air within the bones, in the bone marrow. Of course, in Kali Yuga that's not possible. Prana resides in Anna or in food. So we can't maintain our life without food. But in Satya Yuga, people would maintain their life airs without food. Even without air. What to speak of water? So then he was talking about these examples, and then one of the devotees said, but Prabhupada, you're also doing that now. Because he was practically skin and bone, but still he was wanting to translate. His dictaphone was there. He was very clear-headed, in possession of his mental faculties. He was giving instructions to his disciples. And so his disciples said, you're also like that, Srila Prabhupada. Many of the devotees were crying. They requested Prabhupada to please stay on, please don't leave. So Prabhupada said, all right, few days. I'll extend it by a few days. So he extended it by a few days. But then he said, it's not in my hands. It's in Krishna's hands. So at this time, Srila Prabhupada allowed himself to be served. All his disciples got an opportunity to serve him in such a way where he allowed them to do whatever they wanted to do with his body. And then the devotees were there. As word spread from all over the world, the devotees started gathering in Vrindavan, all in horrified anticipation of the eventual passing away of Srila Prabhupada. More and more of them started coming. His godbrothers also came to visit him from Mathura and other mutts in Vrindavan. And then when they came, Srila Prabhupada looked at them and said, please forgive me for all my offenses. In the course of the preaching, I have done many things. And they said, no, no, no. They used to call him Swami Maharaj. His godbrothers would address him as Swami Maharaj. Said, no, no, Swami Maharaj, you have done extraordinary work. And now because of you, the holy name has spread all over the world. You have fulfilled Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire and order. So at this time, the disciples were watching this exchange. And they were thinking of how Srila Prabhupada had actually manifested his humility. Even Ramanujacharya, when he was about to leave and he called his disciples, he said the same thing to his disciples. Please forgive me for all the offenses that I may have committed against you. And the disciples were horrified to hear this. So there are many parallels between the passing away pastimes of all these great acharyas. And then Prabhupada started speaking later similarly to his disciples. I may have offended many people. I've called people rascal. Because Prabhupada used to sometimes call people rascal because he said it's only to teach them, only to establish the truth that I spoke in a harsh way sometimes. In this way, the last few days were very, very sweet and very intimate. All the devotees were serving him in different ways. And finally when the Kaviraj came, the Ayurvedic doctor, who understood that very little time was left now, he said, Swami Maharaj, do you want anything more? He said, I'm fully satisfied. I don't want anything more now. Indicating that he was ready to go from this world. I would recommend highly to all of you to read Srila Prabhupada's Leelamrita by His Holiness Satswarup Das Goswami Maharaj, which documents this passing away pastime in great detail. Over the weeks and months that preceded his passing away and the events leading up to it, and the different conversations that took place between the devotees and Prabhupada,